keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby. Here with my co-host, DB Schwartz. And I'm also here with LaVon in the studio. We're here doing a special episode tonight on the March Against Monsanto, which is going on in some places in the world starting tonight, but officially it's going on tomorrow, Saturday, May 24th. And we're bringing you some special guests tonight to try to talk about what we're going to do here with this march and what this movement's all about, what food freedom is all about. And you know, and that's really what we're trying to bring about. You know, we're trying to bring about this new food movement. How you doing tonight, bro?
I'm doing well, Nick. Doing well. you know, March Against Monsanto is going to come up tomorrow, and it's kind of evolved into something that's in the public eye now, and a lot of people know about it, and they equate it with GMOs, and they're starting to realize that other countries don't eat this stuff, and shit, China even banned it. Sorry. Excuse my friends, but China even banned GMOs for their own military. So, I mean, it tells a lot when a country that, you know, has a big problem growing their own food doesn't even want to accept our food anymore.
Yeah, man, it's you know, and China's not necessarily known for their high quality regulations. You know, it's kind of one of those things where they found, what was it in their milk they found a couple years ago that was just completely horrible. But even a country like China that has a massive, massive population understands that it doesn't take GMOs to feed the population. That's not what it takes. And I did an article about it, about this whole topic earlier this week about how basically we've been fed this lie, and it's all a product of this huge marketing scheme that was launched after this Time magazine cover basically christened these GMOs as these basically the savior of the world, and it's going to feed all the world. Well, you know, unfortunately, the problem is that the problem of hunger, the problem of poverty, and the problem of people being malnutritioned hasn't gone away. In fact, it's arguably gotten worse. And especially in this country where we're starting to see this massive amount of people in poverty and massive amount of people going hungry. I mean, we're talking about 1 in 6 people in the United States going hungry every day. And these GMOs have not helped the situation at all.
No, they haven't. I mean, yeah, that's a staggering number. It's because people don't have money to pay for it, which is just why it's getting to that silly point where we're growing enough food for 12 billion, yet 50,000 people per day are in dire straits and eventually do die of their malnutrition and starvation. That's a staggering number. So, I mean, we can feed almost twice as many people as are on the planet, yet still many several millions a month die, and it's all because of this economic system. We need to, if we're going to get to a place where we're going to change everything globally, we need to start with the things we all need. That's food and water, and we need to socialize them on a level that's resource-based, so everybody in the world can have enough to eat. It's ridiculous people starve at all, anywhere.
Exactly. And that's the thing I'm most excited about March tomorrow. And we have this aspect where we're advocating to the public real practical solutions that they can apply to their everyday lives. We're giving out seeds, and we're hoping that people leave with some new knowledge on how they can go home and make their gardens and start the real fight, the one in the communities, in the backyards, everywhere.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what it's all about. And we're gonna have a caller on a little bit later. Carrie is gonna call in and talk about community gardening and sharecropping, and about the food freedom movement, the food is free movement. I hope you guys have heard about it. They're helping us promote with the March Against Monsanto, and we're talking about people that are growing food in their yards and giving it away completely free to people. And you know what I'm saying? This is how we beat this problem, because the underlying problem here isn't necessarily the GMOs or the Monsanto issue, but it's the fact that we have an overwhelming amount of people in poverty, or people that are under the poverty level, and they're just malnutritioned. And then Monsanto conveniently is able to come in and say, hey guys, see, that's why you should support us, because we're saving the world, we're feeding the world, we're doing all this stuff. Now, unfortunately, that stuff is not true. It's just a marketing tactic. A lot of people bought into it. It's one of the most common rebuttals I see online when people are talking bad about GMOs. Someone will comment, well, yeah, Monsanto's done more to solve world hunger than any of you hippies will ever do. Well, unfortunately, that's not true. Unless we're talking about them trying to kill people off in order to solve world hunger, they're not increasing the yield of these crops. When we look at the overall crop yields from the staple crops of the United States that are GMO, pesticide-ridden, compared to similar crops that are grown on a large scale in Europe, we're actually seeing that Europe has a larger yield and an increasing yield compared to the GMO stuff.
Well, last year, India had the largest crop yield of rice ever, and it was all organic because they had to go that way due to the rash of farmer suicides from losing their whole crops and then being sued by Monsanto. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Monsanto right now is on the verge of being removed from India, although who knows if they'll come back under some subsidiary eventually. But yeah, it doesn't help with yields except in extreme environment. That's where they need to stay. They could be trying to grow some corn out in the middle of the desert with no water. I'm fine with something like that where the pollens and stuff can't mix with organic crops. But other than that, they're leading to bee colony collapse. I mean, all these pesticides they're putting into the especially the corn and all the other stuff, it's getting in and just killing these bees, and they can't find their colonies or their hives. So, yeah, the bad things are endless.
Now, there was just a study that came out earlier this week, and it showed this is out of Harvard. Okay, this isn't some government science. This is from Harvard. And they've directly linked, and we finally figured, basically what happened is we finally figured out what's killing these bees off. And it turns out, and it's what many of us thought of all along, and what many of us have talked about, it's these neonicotinoid pesticides. And they were able to show, they were able to show that the pesticides, the bees that were grown without the pesticides, only 1 in 6 of their, only 1 in 6 of the hives would have colony collapse disorder. And the ones that were exposed to these neonicotinoids, literally half of these colonies would get this colony collapse disorder. Okay? Now, the neonicotinoids, they're nicotine-based pesticides used heavily on GMO crops, GMO corn, Monsanto corn, and they're anti-fungicide, and it's absorbed into the plant. And the bees come along, and then they get contaminated with this stuff. And one way or another, whether it weakens their immune system or it does something to their nervous system, they don't know exactly what it is yet, but they've been able to pin it down 100% that the neonicotinoid pesticides is the main reason why the bees are dying off. And this is one of the main reasons why we need to continue this movement to march against Monsanto and to resist all these pesticides and to try to go back to these organic farming techniques. And that's what it's all about.
I think we can see the momentum of our efforts if you just do a simple research about food freedom, you'll see many articles. One I found recently published about a family in Vermont who is excited because there's going to be some labeling soon, and they'll be able to make a conscious decision. You know, they're going to say produced with genetically engineered ingredients. So that alone is immense, and it's huge. So hopefully other places around the country will follow suit, especially with all of us saying, hey, we're not okay with this.
And the best thing we could hope for is the more counties will start banning GMOs. I know that L.A. as a city banned GMOs, and that's going to go into effect, I believe, at the beginning of next year. They said they need time to phase it out, which I can understand. But that's great. I mean, once L.A. stops eating GMOs, and you can bet it's because of the Hollywood crowd, then, yeah, man, you're going to see this backlash start and the whole movement start.
Now, while we're on the subject here of banning GMOs, we have a caller that's getting ready to join us here by the name of Chris Hardy. And Chris Hardy is a third-generation farmer whose connection to the land was cultivated in Iowa while working with his grandpa's 400-acre farm. Chris went on to travel extensively working with farming communities as far away as Pakistan. As a farmer actively engaged in permaculture education and the local food movement in southern Oregon, he oversees 10 acres of certified organic vegetables, perennials, and seed crops. He has worked extensively with the Rogue Valley Farm to School program and has served on the Rogue Valley Growers Market Board of Directors for 4 years, actively helping to develop and expand market opportunities for regional farmers. He is chief petitioner of Jackson County Measure 15-119 and founding farmer of Our Farmers Farms Coalition, Our Family Farms Coalition, working to protect Southern Oregon's farmers from the risks of genetically engineered crops being grown by multinational chemical corporations. He has spoken extensively on the impacts of genetically engineered crops are having on South Oregon family farms and recently a guest at a number of conferences from Oregon to Iowa. And we're joined by Chris Hardy now, and he's one of the guys that helped get GMOs banned down in Southern Oregon. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Yeah, pretty good, Nick. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, man, thanks for being on the show. You know, we have a lot of people listening tonight, and, you know, these are all people that are getting ready to march against Monsanto tomorrow, and everybody's wondering, how did Oregon do it? What was it that you guys did that you were able to get this stuff banned? Because, you know, you're one of the first in the continental United States to be able to pull this thing off.
So it was pretty much just clear after the discovery of genetically engineered sugar beets being grown out the back of a number of different schools here in Southern Oregon, and that discovery was kind of on accident as our farm was looking for a piece of land to lease, and the landowner that I was talking to about leasing this piece of land shared with us that he also was leasing to this company, Syngenta, who was growing genetically engineered sugar beets. So that was kind of the wake-up call for us here in Southern Oregon, and just like put out the word, and like about 75 people showed up across the valley, and it was very clear that this wasn't something that we needed to have being grown here in our county. And something had to be done about that.
So, how would a person go or a group go about trying to get GMOs banned out of their county, whether they're in California or in New York or anywhere around the country? What kind of process or what kind of steps would you recommend for people to take to go about trying to get these GMOs banned?
So first off, you know, the alignment has to be there in the community, the awareness, the consciousness. You know, again, for us, it was just the fact that there was the world's largest chemical corporation, producing genetically engineered crops right out the back, literally out the back of the fence of the schools, who were saving, you know, their gardens were saving seeds, and I managed the Ashland High School garden, and, we were saving chard and beet seeds, you know, and it was just kind of like this. It was the right thing to do. After follow-up conversations with the company, come to find out they were producing these sugar beets out across the entire Rogue Valley, using 23 different chemicals to do such. And so, you know, the community, I guess you could say it was a little bit easier for us to understand, like, something had to be done. You know, if you live in a place like Iowa, that might be a bit of a challenge when you're surrounded 360 degrees by Roundup Ready soybeans and BT pesticide producing corn. So, like, you know, all these things are patented and, you know, they're technology agreements that you have to sign in order to grow and save the seeds on these things. So, you know, I think it's really important to involve local farmers. It's important to involve gardeners and people who are passionate about local food and about protecting the local food assets. You know, so much of our food is distributed across the United States is trucked in from, you know, a minimum of 1,500 miles, and that number probably continues to grow. So, you know, where does that food come from? You know, people don't really know where their food comes from anymore. So this is just, it's just kind of like, you know, if the community is in alignment and understands what is the vision, the future for the food supply for the community, then, you know, it's ripe, to bring people together around, creating a citizens initiative that would ban the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense because, you know, it's affecting the children and, you know, obviously you're in a agricultural community and agriculture is regarded very, very highly there. And in my opinion, it's kind of telling, when it comes to the rest of the country because a lot of us here, like, for instance, here where I'm at in San Diego, you know, we don't have that much agriculture. And we have, you know, we have home gardeners and things like that. So a lot of people don't understand the complexity of this issue. Now, I remember, before you were helping us with the March Against Monsanto back last May, and I remember talking to you, and you were telling me about all the extra work that all the farmers had to go through just to maintain your organic crops because of the fact that GMO crops were growing, nearby. And the fact that they were able to cross-pollinate and contaminate your crops. Can you go a little bit into the whole problem with this cross-contamination and the threat that it poses to us?
Yeah, so to understand, like, seed production, you know, it's all about the pollen. You know, Mother Nature has it built into the system so that it's either wind-pollinated or carried by insects, and that pollen can, it doesn't matter if it's GMO or, you know, if it's genetically engineered or if it's conventional or if it's organic, if it's the same genus and species, it will cross-pollinate with an adjacent plant. So in the case of sugar beets and chard and table beets, those are all beta vulgaris and they all share pollen. So, you know, if you get any of this Monsanto pollen, you know, Roundup resistant traits in your chart, you know, it's like something you just can't get out of there. It just stays in there. Like a friend of mine, veteran farmer says, like, it's like a fish hook. You know, you put it into the DNA of the plant, of the seeds that you're saving. You never get it back out of there. It's just in there indefinitely. So, you know, understanding that nearly 75% of all proprietary seeds are owned by several chemical companies, you know, the largest chemical companies on earth, you know, they've got all these designer seeds and, these things that, you know, they say that, you know, they've got these special traits, but really they're just about their chemicals that you have to purchase, in order to have success with their seed. And it's their intellectual property and, you know, it's an industry that's priced at more than $35 billion, and it requires that every farmer on earth who grows these things pays royalties to these companies. So that I think is really important for farmers to understand that by choosing a system of GMOs that you're actually kind of signing a deal with the devil, and you know you're not allowed to save your seeds. You have to buy their chemicals. And we know we're seeing very clear what the chemicals do over time, over a number of years, what they do to the soil biology and how they kill the soil that we, you know, rely on for these plants to be healthy. And then we eat those plants and so it's not really like we're supporting, much of our own health, you know, as a global community or in our local communities, if that's what the predominant method of agriculture is for your community.
Now, Chris, could I ask you something real quick? With Senate Bill 863, where they basically made it impossible now for any county besides yours that got grandfathered in to ban these things, is there a backlash going on as far as recalling most of these Republican guys that voted yes for this?
Well, that sure would be nice. You know, now that we've managed our crop ban, our GMO ordinance here in Jackson County, Josephine County, likewise, able to do that. You know, we had a resounding victory of 2-1 vote, and in Jackson County, and a 58% to 42% in Josephine County, pretty solid victory there. But the state says that Josephine County is illegitimate, and their ban will likely not withstand the courts because of this preemption that the state said you can't do that. So, you know, the monies that came through to these politicians that you're mentioning, this money came from ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And the Koch brothers, ALEC and the Koch brothers, gave tremendous, like, large sums of money to these politicians to ensure that the passage of the Oregon Monsanto Protection Act. And the Oregon Monsanto Protection Act indeed is a recipe for contamination, and it's a one size fits all for the chemical companies who don't care if our family farms who are saving their seeds or purchasing their seeds online, wherever they're coming from. Like in the case of our farm here in Southern Oregon, you know, you've got a chemical company growing right next door to you. It pretty much is just a guarantee that you're going to get this technology into your seeds where you don't want it. So eventually, the whole state's just going to be contaminated, and that's, you know, in the Pacific Northwest produces vast amounts of the nation's seed supply for all gardeners. You know, you could be down in Houston, Texas, picking up seeds off the seed rack at Walmart, God forbid, or so whatever your local garden store, wherever you got to go to get your seeds. It does not matter. Vast amounts of those seeds are produced in the Pacific Northwest, which is world class for seed production. So we're talking about this 863 Senate bill that was signed by Kitziaver last fall, is not only putting the specialty seed industry at risk, it's putting our nation's food supply at risk, and the future of family farms across America who choose not to use this technology in their production.
Now, this kind of brings up a great point here, because now on one side, and I know they've done the same thing here in California, where they basically said, well, no, counties can't ban GMO themselves. It has to be done at the state level. And this was done with lobbying by Monsanto and the likes, you know, these other big, you know, Syngenta and all these companies. While at the same time, so they're arguing against local sovereignty, first of all. While at the same time, they're saying, well, no, at the same time, we can't have state rights. We got to do it at the federal level. So what are these – I mean, it's so hypocritical, this policy, because they're saying, okay, well, no, it shouldn't be county. It should be statewide. And then while at the same time, they're trying to push this law through, which has now become known as the DARC Act, which is this voluntary, you know, GMO-funded, biotech-funded voluntary labeling bill, which is completely nonsense. That's going up at the federal level. That's going to be considered by Congress pretty soon here. So I mean, what these people are arguing for is just total centralization of all of the policy of all of our food. And what this movement is with the March Against Monsanto is, you know, we're pushing for the opposite. We're pushing for the decentralization, the autonomous movements, the local policy. And it's like, these corporations don't get it. they don't get where the people are at. They're many, many years behind where we're at, where we're trying to get food freedom and we don't want to eat this crap anymore. While they're pushing hypocritical policy, that just doesn't make sense. And we're going to get a little bit into this a little bit later. Chris, I just wanted to ask you, is there anything else that you want to talk about real quick before we have to move on to our next caller?
No, I think it's just really important, like you say, to understand the process is about the top-down approach. And you know, look at the state level here in Oregon trying to stop local farmers' rights from saving seeds. You look at the Monsanto Protection Act in the United States that did not get enough support to be active. And now, you know, we have the TPP or the TPP, TPIP or whatever they're calling it now, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and versions of that that on the global level are again, trying to stop labeling and trying to stop local initiatives from declaring food sovereignty. So I think it's really clear that really it's time for us to wake up as a nation and as a people, and figure out how we're going to do this. And of course, it begins with local, because if you get clear with what the local vision is, you cannot stop that. You cannot wrest that control from the people.
Oh, that's a great way to end a little segment there, man. I couldn't agree with you more. Once again, Chris Hardy from Jackson County, Oregon. He was instrumental in helping ban GMOs out of Jackson County, man. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for giving us your time.
Thanks for being an inspiration, and also work on getting that 863 repealed and getting all those guys out of office, man. That's a good first start.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thank you guys so much for all you do.
All right, Chris.
Best of luck tomorrow. Okay, be well.
So I mean, you know, we're talking right here with a small organic farmer, man, and this guy helped us with the March Against Monsanto the first time around, and he was just a bit too busy to help us this time, but they're doing great things up there. And as you can see, the movement is spreading. Where were we a year ago? Last month we were the Congress just signed in and President Obama signed in this Monsanto Protection Act. And look where we're at now. It's only been a year. And things are changing very quickly.
And they're getting desperate because they're trying to push through stuff now that's going to strip the state's rights to be able to do these things like these Monsanto Protection Acts on a state level. They're just trying to, it's like you were saying, man, the sovereignty is up for sale. And if people that live in a place like L.A. where they have a massive Hollywood lobby can ban it citywide, trust me, it can be banned. Every city can ban it. They can't get it down to the city. They can't get it down to that level. Maybe they can do it on a state level, but then each city is going to be able to ban it. And I think maybe one of our projects could soon be getting San Diego to ban it too. If L.A. got it banned, we should have no problem.
Exactly, man. It's all about getting this decentralization, you know. I think we have another caller coming in here. I think we're being joined now by Carrie Luna, and she's an inspiration as well. And I got her bio here. She's a single divorced mother of three in poverty, striving in large part due to her own front yard and backyard gardens. Member of the grassroots organization consisting of half a dozen women from the St. Louis area called the Gallivanting Guerrilla Gardeners. They prioritize food freedom in communities of color with emphasis on fighting racism and sexism through self-reliance and cooperative learning and growing so that we don't need the white supremacist patriarchal system. And I couldn't agree more with that bio, and I'm really glad to have you on. How are you doing tonight, Carrie?
Pretty good. I really enjoyed your last guest.
Thank you. Yeah, Chris has been doing such great work, and he was able to, you know, go into a little bit of what they've done there in South Oregon to get these invasive crops, is the way I see them. These GMOs, they're just such invasive crops, and not only are they polluting the organic farmers, but they're polluting the water supply with all these pesticides and all this Roundup Ready technology, which is just a nightmare, in my opinion. One of the reasons why we asked you to join us tonight is because not only do we want to bring awareness about why Monsanto is bad, But we also want to talk about how we can go about in our personal lives and within our families and within our communities to take back our food supply. And I wanted to bring you on so you could talk a little bit about, you know, community gardens, sharecropping, sharing yards, and any other way that you think that we can go about at the individual level or at the local level to kind of break away from this centralized food system and take our food fate back into our own hands. So I'll let you talk about that for a little bit, and feel free to take you know, as much time as you need to get in depth with this stuff, because our listeners really want to know how they can get involved at home or in their communities and how they can really start this movement, kickstart it, and get it going.
Absolutely. This centralization you were discussing in this TPP and this Monsanto Protection Act and all of these, this corporate centralization is, it's the opposite of food sovereignty. And if we don't have food sovereignty, we're not going to have food for very much longer. I mean, this, as we further our greed, we hurry along our extinction is how I see it. And I proved in my own yard that you can feed a family, not here in the winter so much as in San Diego, but for a large part of the year, I can feed my family primarily from my own yard for free, through saving seeds. There was an initial tiny investment, and then through this outreach with communities and other people that have been doing this for a while, you can find seed shares completely free. You don't have to bring your own seeds. The seeds are just there. They're grown organically. They're heirloom. And you just plant it and watch it grow. And Mother Nature really does take care of things. And doing this with your neighbors, with other family members, it's more than just food sovereignty. It's community. It's sharing. It's, you know, if you're sharing food with your neighbor, you have to speak to them. You have to learn their name. We have to look at each other again instead of looking at our phones or looking at our computers. And we've been doing one community garden for 3 years, and it has just been outstanding. It's just been such an experience. I can't even begin to explain. None of us are professionals. None of us make any money for this. We just do it. We do it with the community, as leaders, as participants, and as learners.
Yeah, and sorry, we have another caller on the line. Can you mute your, the other caller, can you please mute your, background? Yeah, that's wonderful. And you know, the other thing about, that I've noticed about gardening, and I just started my garden last year after I landed headfirst in this March Against Monsanto movement, is that I've been much happier when it comes to my mental health, you know, and a lot of people forget about the fact that gardening has been shown to increase your mental health, not only your sense of community, but it makes you a lot happier, and it eases the anxiety and eases the depression and things like that.
Absolutely. I can't express enough. Of course, there's plenty of perennials and heirloom plants that you can grow that are actually medicinal. Echinacea, purple coneflower, is the first one that comes to mind. But the actual physical action of gardening, I annoy people on my Facebook constantly posting pictures as things grow and develop. You can see my garden in March, then you can see my garden in April, then you can see my garden now in May. I picked strawberries off the vine and ate them. That is therapeutic. It's a beautiful feeling. It's a struggle being in poverty, but these kind of things lift up your spirit, and especially when you do it as a community with other people. But the community garden is 20 miles, 25 miles from my house, and I pull up, and it feels like home. It's just amazing. The community just comes together. This is a community of color. If anyone knows about oppression, they do. And they just rose up as a community and came together. We're not from the community, but we all just came together, and we took this lot that is actually not leased. It's called LRA. Basically, the city has claimed it. You're allowed to lease it, but the community said, we don't want to lease it. We're going to take it. And we did. We took it with them.
Wow.
And yeah, it's two lots, and it's covered in food, flowers. They have a peace garden dedicated to the young people that have been killed through gun violence in the community. It's just, it's taken on a life of its own, and all we did was show up, very little money, just, I'm talking tens and twenties out of people's pockets.
I gotta identify with you a whole lot right now. For the holiday season, my family members all pitched together and bought me a seed bank. And I have close to 100 varieties now, and I've been sharing them with everybody. And
absolutely.
At least 10 of my friends are growing their own food and doing the same thing, and it's perpetual health. Why not give it away? And I'm comforted knowing, like, that's less time they have to spend at a J-O-B. You know, now they're able to eat and have this wellness aspect of their life simultaneously.
Right. Well, I have, the first thing that was shared with me was heirloom broccoli called Waffen 29. Mm-hmm. And we ate some of the heads, and then we were able to save 461 seeds from what was left on that plant. So if you do the math, those seeds were planted all over the place the next year, and then how many seeds came from those 400 plus seeds, and how many seeds can
perpetual.
You don't have to buy into this consumption system of greed
we
to provide your own food.
You and I.
Absolutely. Come to St. Louis.
we
have seed shares. We share hundreds of seeds, thousands.
Let's use the old analog style. I'll send you a letter with seeds.
Okay.
So, Carrie, I wanted to get a little into detail here real quick. And we do have another caller on the line from 253. Who's the caller there? Hey, you still on the line there? 253 area code? Okay, I'm gonna have to drop the caller. Okay, Carrie, I wanted to get a little bit more in depth, because I know a lot of the people listening tonight, they have the energy and the want to get out there and either start a community garden or start a sharecropping, which is, I think, kind of what it is when you're sharing yards. It's basically sharecropping, a new version of sharecropping like they used to do a long time ago. Can you give us a little bit of the organizational or maybe some ideas for people to get started? You know, what do we need to do to get started to start a community garden or start a sharecropping movement in our areas?
Well, I mean, if you're overwhelmed, I would say start very, very small in your own yard. Go knock on the doors. If you haven't met your neighbors yet, it's a wonderful excuse to make yourself do it. Knock on the doors and say, hey, If you want to help, great. If you don't want to help, I'm still bringing you food if you want it. What would one thing that's been really helpful, small scale and large scale, is to ask the community, I want to do this in my yard. What would you like to eat? What can I grow that you would like? If, you know, and of course it has to be, you know, growable in your area. Like, we can't grow oranges here, but just start asking your neighbors, introduce yourself. You know, we're worried about these pesticides, and we're worried about these GMOs, and we want to do this organically, heirloom crops, and we want to know who's interested in the neighborhood. Let's have a community garden. I mean, it's literally organic is the only way that I can say. I mean, doing it guerrilla, that was kind of hardcore, but it doesn't have to be that way. There's people in St. Louis that will lease this a community garden, but I would say, you know, start knocking on doors. If you have a partner, one other person to go with you, that's great, but, you know, either way, just start asking, what would you like to see? I think that's very important, especially if it's not, you know, your own actual immediate local area. If you're in, like, some of these homeowners associations, you know, they're not going to, you know, allow you to grow, you know, in your front yard, but especially if it's not in your own local community, you have to involve the community, I feel, and you have to ask them, what do you want to see with this space? What can we do to further our own food freedom, to learn and grow together? And just plant the stuff in the ground. Just plant it, and I promise Mother Nature will take care of business.
You're right. Thank you for sharing that. That's an important thing that you bring up, too, is we've got to disconnect from our machines and connect more with the people who surround us. And what a better way to bridge a gap than via food, you know, something we all do every day, all day, hopefully. And that's what we're trying to ensure is that people have food. And I'm curious to know, you know, around the corner for me is a lot, like the one you speak of near your home. And if I just wanted to grow food there, what kind of opposition from my community do you think I would expect in regards to the officials? What types of things did you encounter?
Well, actually, the original, the Northside Community Garden, the one that I've been speaking so highly of, that I'm so dedicated to, and that these gallivanting guerrilla gardeners that I'm a member of work on, we were at the very end of the last of Occupy, and a member of that community came and says, "Oh yeah, you're against oppression, put your bodies where your mouth is, and come to the neighborhood." A gentrifier, who's actually also a crooked politician, was trying to use this space, hadn't taken care of it in years, there were actually two murders there, had completely let it overgrown, didn't care anything about it until he saw a place for profit, and he wanted to install a parking lot. So that's actually how it started. They said, come, use your privilege to stand and fight with us. If you really care about oppression, come where it really exists and stand and fight with us. Plant stuff in the ground. Help us with whatever resources you can, but most with your bodies, with your presence. Dig up the land and plant stuff for and with the community so that this parking lot can't happen. And he still wants the parking lot, and 3 years later, he still doesn't have it. Why? Because of people power. People came together and took the land. It's their land. It's in their community. There are no more commons. You know, our commons are disappearing little by little and being bought by entities. And these people said, no, we just don't, you know, we're not quite, we're a little in fear, and we need people that are supposedly, you know, fighting. You're occupying, come occupy the hood with us. And that's what we did in three, we're in our third year, just starting our third season, and there is the Three Sisters, Corn, Beans, and Squash is growing up in a raised berm, and it is gorgeous, and it's just a beautiful thing.
And you know, I can identify greatly with what you're doing there, because where I'm from here, down in Chula Vista, California, we're part of San Diego County, but we're also an extremely poor neighborhood, and we've got the highest rate of diabetes in San Diego County. And we're basically in a food desert, even though in San Diego we've got basically the greatest climate in the country. Surprisingly, we're in a food desert, and today I was just so frustrated because I didn't have the time to make my own food, and there was almost nowhere I could eat because everything was junk food. And there's a gentleman here from Los Angeles called named Ron Finley. And what he's done is also very, very awesome, and they've started just guerrilla gardening and taking the place back. But I wanna ask you about why it's so important in these poor communities to get the community involved in growing their own food, considering the health issues and the obesity rates and the diabetes rates. I just wanted to know, because in my opinion, it's even more of a priority in these poor areas to get this food autonomy than it is for the middle class, which can afford to go eat at Whole Foods and things like that, and they could actually afford to eat organically. I think it is more important in the poor communities, and I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, absolutely. I'm 40 years old, and 36 of my 40 years, I've been at least 10,000 below the poverty level, and 10 of those years, I've been raising children on my own. I grew up in rural poverty, and now I'm at the edge of urban sprawl, but work on the north side of St. Louis, which is, they're homeowners, it's not necessarily poverty, but it's definitely oppression. It's definitely, you know, communities of color are affected more by bad air, bad water. There was just a study done, and I can't remember, but it's enormous how much poverty and these communities of color are affected by pollution. and by not having, like you said, a place to go get healthy food. And this is my only problem as a poor person with labeling, where I'd rather just see banning, because I will still be able to afford the GMO food. It'll be cheaper. It always has been. It's subsidized. The government, which is owned primarily by Monsanto and their ilk, is, you know, going to continue to subsidize so that it's cheaper for me to go buy a McDonald's. It's been years, but it's still cheaper for me to go buy a McDonald's hamburger than it is to get some organic lettuce, unless I have it growing. And these people, including myself, we need empowerment together to know that just because we're poor, we don't have to put up with this. We don't have to be dependent. We don't have to sit by and be... basically, I mean, killed, sickened.
Yes, we're being taken advantage of. We're being taken advantage of by these large corporations, which, like you said, are basically completely in bed with the government. They're subsidized massively. We're talking about Monsanto that gets massive amounts of corn subsidies for their crops, and McDonald's, which is their labor force is subsidized, and everyone else, you know, anyone else that wants to have a small business or a community garden, for instance, is subject to typical government regulation and things like that. But these large corporations are able to exploit these loopholes, and we end up with this completely, completely regressive system at every single angle that we try to find. It's regressive, and it's showing. We've got higher in the poor communities. We've got higher rates of illness, higher rates of diabetes. And the whole point here, I think, with this whole March Against Monsanto movement, at least for me, it's not so much about specifically the GMOs or specifically about Monsanto, because even if Monsanto were taken out of business and GMOs were banned tomorrow, the people in the poor community are still going to be eating this processed stuff that's subsidized by the government. So in the end, I think this whole movement is about food freedom and expanding food to everybody, because food, in my opinion, is a human right, and it's not a privilege. It's not someone that has enough money should be able to afford real food. I think everybody should be able to have access to real food. And now we got a couple callers on the line that I don't want to ignore you guys. Is Tammy on the line by chance? Tammy, if you're there, say hi.
Hi.
Hey, Tammy. How's it going?
It's going really good. How are you?
Pretty good. We're here in a round table. I have my co-host here.
Hello.
LaVon, which helps on our Friday night show, and she's also an organizer here in San Diego. We have Carrie on the line. She's in St. Louis. She's going to be speaking tomorrow at the March Against Monsanto. And now we have Tammy Canal on the line. She's the founder of the March Against Monsanto. And I guess I don't really need to talk about your bio. You helped start up this whole movement. And you've been an awesome leader in this thing and helping this movement take place. And think about all the stuff that we've seen happen in the last year. I mean, it's been a year from basically tomorrow when this March Against Monsanto started. And now we've seen Vermont ban GMOs. We had Chris Hardy on earlier where they banned GMOs out of Oregon. Just quickly, if you want to just talk about how the movement has evolved, where you think it's going, where we've had some success. Anything you want to talk about, feel free.
I think we've had a lot of success in raising awareness and education. I look back on when we first started this just a year ago and how many people really didn't know what a GMO was, didn't know, you know, what Monsanto was doing between our food supply and also with, you know, the government corruption that runs so deep. You know, and just we've come so far in a year with education. It's incredible. And I think that we've really evolved. Like you mentioned, it's not just about GMOs with Monsanto. It's about so much more. I mean, one of our lead organizers, Kelly Derricks, is suffering from, you know, the ramifications of Agent Orange, a war that, you know, what was sprayed in a war that she wasn't even alive for. And she lives with that, you know, daily, and Monsanto has never been punished for these crimes, and I just feel like our movement is really making people aware of, you know, not only the GMO issue, by Monsanto, but just so much more. I like to call them the octopus with all their tentacles. I mean, they've got a hand in the TPP. You know, they've got a hand in it all. Anything bad, you know, Monsanto's not too far from.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. It's this monolithic problem, and it's kind of what we see going on within every rank of the government. It's this over-centralization of everything. Now we're talking about the internet, net neutrality. We're talking about the monetary system, the Federal Reserve, the banking system. Now the food system, the electricity grids. These are all ways that, in the end, they put a chill on our freedom, because when we don't have access to these things that we need to survive, like food, water, electricity, it really puts a dampen on our ability to express and assert our freedom and our rights and our liberty. And that's why I think this food freedom movement is so big and so important, because besides water, food is essentially the one other thing that we really, really need. I mean, we do need shelter and we do need electricity and stuff, but food and water are the two really big things. And I think, in my opinion, the more autonomous and the more independent we can get with our food supply and the more localized, the less we have to rely on the government or corporations or any other external forces. Carrie, I just wanted to give you another few minutes here, just to if you wanted to throw any more info out there about what you're doing, or any tips you can give anybody out there that's trying to start a community garden or anything like that. If you could just give us a couple minutes of info here before we finish this show up.
Sure. I would just emphasize not to be overwhelmed, not to be scared. You know, that's what the system wants from us, is to be intimidated, to be in fear, because that keeps us, you know, that keeps us the opposite of empowered. That keeps us down. Just do it. Just do it. Involve the community. And just do it. You look to your ancestors, look to what the indigenous people did, like the Three Sisters, like following the moon, for planting. Google's a wonderful place. You can check several different places to make sure you're not getting BS, but, you know, that's what I've done for the last 3 years, is I wasn't sure about peppers. How do I grow peppers here? You know, and just do it. Just feel empowered if you can, and try to empower others with you, and just say, let's do this. We can be in control of our food.
Thank
if
you,
we
Carrie.
Just do it.
You're right. You are an inspiration. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie. We do have one other caller on the line. Are you still there?
Yes.
All right, who's this? And did you have a question for Tammy, or did you have a question for one of us?
Well, I'd like to say something, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
My name is Romulus, and I just wanted to emphasize, if you can, anytime you can avoid eating fast food, do it. Anytime you can avoid stopping at McDonald's for hunger because you're, you know, hungry, do it. And
I think that's a great point. People need to reprogram their mindset that fast food could be fruit and nuts. I don't leave my house without those items. Bottled water and a piece of fruit, you know, that is fast food to me.
Exactly.
So I think
that's
a wonderful tip.
It's all you really need to get through to the day. And mm-hmm. right now, I don't know if anybody knows, there's a movie out called X-Men. It just came out today. And it talks about humans and then humans that have mutant powers of, you know, fighting each other and, you know, causing their own extinction. And that's kind of an allusion to what will happen if we continue to fight each other because we have black skin or we like our own gender. And, you know, also, you know, we have to grow our own food. And then, but if people continue to go to, you know, places that put poison in their food, they're not going to live much longer, you know. And, you know, in the impoverished areas, you know, kids will, you know, get easy access to those fast food places because their parents won't have the resources to grow their own food. So they, you know, they'll grow up and they'll have, you know, diabetes and problems like that.
Oh, yeah. Now, Romulus, thanks for calling in, man. And call back in to our show on Monday, and we'll talk a little more. I gotta move on here so we can talk a little more with Tammy. But you know, one big thing I wanted to bring up here in San Diego, and I just noticed, I don't know how widespread it is, but now we're talking about Jack in the Box, Wiener Schnitzel, and McDonald's being subsidized by the government directly via food stamps. What? I mean, you can now use food stamps at these fast food companies that are killing people. Okay, and this is all part of this total bigger problem here, where it's just that we got this food system that is it's been corporatized, it's been hijacked by the corporate interests, it's being controlled by just a very, very few amount of people, and guess what? There's hundreds of millions of us Americans and billions of people across the world that are being affected by this. And I think that's what really spawned this March Against Monsanto movement. Tammy, we only have about 5 minutes left. I just want to talk to you a little bit about where do you think this movement's going? What's the future? I think we've made great progress in this past year, and now I think that we've evolved a bit, and now we're focused on solutions and things. But where do you think we're headed in the future? Where is the food system headed? And what do you think is the most effective thing that we can do individually to bring about this food freedom?
Well, Carrie hit it right on the head, the nail on the head. It's being self-sustainable. The more that you empower yourself and provide for your family without, you know, corporate influence and having to rely on a, you know, grocery store, you're basically, you know, like what is the saying? When you grow food, it's basically like growing money. You're empowering yourself. You're becoming self-sustainable. That is the first place to start. And there's no excuse why you can't have a garden. Like she said, Google small garden solutions. You can grow enough food for a small family on a patio. You know, so there's no reason why people shouldn't be growing their own food. And it is hard. I'm a horrible gardener, but I can even do it. So there's hope for everyone. And as far as and as far as the movement goes, I don't think we're going to stop until Monsanto, you know, gives into the will of the people. I mean, we have, you know, millions of people across the world standing up for what is right. I mean, food freedom is, I mean, that's the future. We shouldn't have to rely on corporations to feed us. You know, like Carrie also said, our ancestors did it for hundreds of years, you know. We can do this.
Definitely.
We can take back our food, and we're going to.
And as far as aquaponics go and things of that sort and setups that people can do on-grid, because I know there's lots of ways that we can kind of start this in baby steps and start growing limited quantities of food, even in apartments. What can you tell people that are situations like that, that are kind of getting by and they're starting to see these food prices rise and they need to get some food growing for themselves?
You know, gardening is actually a really cheap solution to combat, like, the rising food prices. You know, seeds are very cheap. If you spend the money and buy good quality organic seeds, you're going to reap the benefits for many years, you know. So I really encourage people to look into small solution gardening. You can find a whole slew of information about it on the web. Like I said, growing, you know, just a kitchen garden on a small patio, in a garage. I mean, there are ways. People just have to really, you know, become empowered and realize that they can do it.
And I know definitely that herbs are easy to grow even on a windowsill, and they provide a lot of medicinal benefits, and that's something people can start with if they're wondering. You know, herbs can grow anywhere and they're low maintenance.
Exactly.
Tammy, thanks for being on this special edition of the Anti-Media / March Against Monsanto Radio. We're coming to the end of the show here. I guess we'll be talking online a little bit later as we get down to the final moments here. I think some of these countries are getting ready to start off here. New Zealand, Australia are getting ready to go. So
4 hours.
Yeah, so best luck to the movement, and thanks for calling in.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Have a great night and a good march tomorrow.
Thank you.
Oh, we will.
Now, one final thing I wanted to get to before the show ends, and I hear the music, but look, if you guys don't have a yard to grow your own food, you can grow vertically on your
empty
patio.
Plots.
You can grow indoors. You can find an empty plot. You find a buddy with a yard. Find a friend with a yard.